Okay, good morning. Thank you for coming, and may our learning be a merit. Ili nishmas, meirachai, and nechama bracha lea shalom bas David Mordechai, sheyichya, and for refuah shalema, for Yaakov Moshe ben Shani. Today's daf is daf Yud Beis in Masechet Mura. We were on daf Yud Aleph, Amud Beis. The big theme on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis is the view of Rabbi Yehuda that if a person is to consecrate a single limb, a part of an animal, he says the leg of this animal is an ola, the hair of this animal is an ola, so then the holiness does not spread through the whole animal. You have this bizarre reality of a leg with the sanctity of Ola and the rest of the animal being chulin, being unholy at all. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara said, though, that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the limb consecrated is a limb that impacts the soul, Eivar Shanashama Tluya Bo, then the holiness would spread throughout the entirety of the animal. Then we had a question, what is the definition of Eivar Shanashama Tluya Bo? Is it a limb that would cause a status of trefa, a limb that would cause the status of nevela, or a limb that were it to be removed, the animal would die right away. Okay, but we're very taken. We're taken with this idea of an animal that's partially holy. Part of the animal is an ola, the rest of the animal's nothing. This is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Someone can consecrate a leg of an animal, and just the leg is holy. So the Gemara now is going to have continue with a whole bunch of questions about this view. We had a question of, if only one part of the animal was holy, would we say that there's a prohibition of cutting the wool of the animal? Isser Giza, that's what we concluded yesterday. So now we're going to have, we might as well start from there again, right? So about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 lines from the bottom. Ba'i miname Rava. They asked the question of Rava. Hikdish chad ever. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that you can make holy a single limb. Let's say he made holy the leg. Mahu begiza. Is he allowed to shear the wool of the animal? So the Gemara answered, Tifshat lacham adatanya. Why don't you resolve it from the following braisa? The Braisa says, Lo tagoz b'chor tzonecha. You're not allowed to shear the wool of the firstborn of your sheep. That tells you, Avalat tagoz as b'shalcha v'shalacherim. You are allowed to shear the wool if the sheep is owned by you together with a Gentile. So it means if you only have part of the sheep, and only part of the sheep presumably is b'chor, you are allowed to shear the wool. So the same thing should be true. If you have an animal and only part of it is holy, you should be allowed to shear the wool. So unless it's not approved. Awesome, over there, lo nachlik dusha klal. If a Gentile is a partner, it doesn't become b'chor at all. Hacha, but over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, nachlik dusha. There is a little bit of holiness. It's just not full holiness. So you don't have a proof. Lishnachmin, another version of this rejection. Hasam ein biyadulak disha. There where the Gentile is a partner, he doesn't have the ability to make it holy. Hacha biyadulak disha. But over here, he has the ability to make it holy, so we have not resolved the question about shearing the wool. All right, another question. This is what we got up to yesterday. Abai asked the following question of Rava. Again, according to Yehuda, that you can make holy only part of the animal, hikdish ora. Maybe, what happened? What's the law in the following case? He made holy the skin of the animal. He didn't make holy the leg, all of the skin. But what's past the skin, the meat, is not holy. So Mao Bavoda, is he allowed to now work the animal? Or do we say that since the skin is holy, biblically he's not allowed to work the animal? Tashma, coming here, proof we learned. Omer Mashab Me'ah Shalzu Ola. If a person says what's inside the stomach of this one is an Ola, in other words, just the fetus is an Ola, so he made the fetus holy and not the rest holy. Muteres Begiza, he's allowed to shear the wool. Vasura Bavoda, but he's not allowed to work the animal. Because working the animal is going to weaken the fetus. So the same thing should be true about the skin. If just the fetus is holy, can't work the animal because the working will weaken the fetus. if just the skin is holy, you shouldn't be able to work the animal because the working is going to weaken the skin. It's going to damage the skin. Amale, he said to him, that's not a proof. That's just saying you can't work the animal rabbinically. On a rabbinic basis, they said don't work the animal because it'll weaken the fetus, which is holy. But maybe there's no biblical sin. And our question is there a biblical sin in working an animal when only the skin of the animal was made holy and not the animal itself? Iachi, so the Gemara says, if that's the case, that when it regards to the case of the fetus, when the Braisa says you're not allowed to work the mother, when the fetus is what's holy, that's only rabbinic. Iachi afilu begitza nami titzar. Even shearing the wool should have been prohibited because you're making rabbinic prohibitions. Amalei said, no, the rabbis are not making a prohibition against shearing the wool when the fetus is holy and the mother is not. Avodah d'mikchasha, to say don't work the mother, that makes sense because working weakens it. The rabbis are going to make a decree, don't work it. However, Giza, when you shear the wool of the mother and only the fetus inside is what's holy, you're not impacting the child inside at all. So they didn't make any prohibition. The rabbis there didn't make a decree. Again, we haven't resolved our question of whether there is a biblical prohibition in working an animal when the animal, when that animal's skin is holy, but nothing else about that animal is holy. All right, next question. Again, we're fascinating with this question, this issue of an animal that's part holy and part not. So how do you deal with it? It's a fascinating question. So boy mine Abaye mir of Yosef. Abaye asked the following question of Rav Yosef. What about the following? He shlamim. Let's say the animal's pregnant. So the mother was made into a shlamim. But the fetus wasn't made holy. The fetus isn't holy at all. Let's say you have a pregnant mother. Somebody said, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can make parts of an animal holy. Somebody said, the mother is a shlamim and the fetus is nothing. It's chulin. Now we know we have a rule. You're not allowed to bring chulin into the Beit HaMikdash. So now what do you do with this mother? Do you bring it into Beit HaMikdash? Because the mother itself is holy. Can you shecht it in Beit HaMikdash? The shechting of the mother also works for the fetus. So when you shechted the mother in Beit HaMikdash, which is what you're supposed to do because the mother was a karban shlamin, you also accomplished the shechita for the fetus. So is that considered chulin la'azara? That's considered secular items in Beit HaMikdash. Or maybe not, because there's no other choice. There's no choice. What are you going to do? You're supposed to shecht the mother. The fetus is inside. You can't separate the fetus from the mother. So, all right, it is what it is. And it's not a violation of bringing chulin into Beit HaMikdash. And it's not a violation of shechitas chulin ba'azar. And then the Gemara is going to ask the next question. It's the other way. Let's say the mother was left secular and the fetus was made holy. And you shecht that outside Beit HaMikdash. Is that considered shechting a carbon outside Beit HaMikdash? Or do we say again, well, there's no choice. The fetus was inside the mother. Since the mother couldn't be brought in, you can't bring in the fetus. And we're fascinated with this issue. When you can divide up an animal, part of it holy, part of it not holy, does it get the stat? Do we give it the laws of holiness? Do we not give it the laws of holiness? That's our question. So again, so let's go back. So by mine, Abaye mir of Yosef. Abaye asked the question of Rav Yosef. We're on the second to last line here on Yud Aleph Amin Beis. He shlamin, the mother animal was made into a shlamin. But vlada chulin, but the child was left not holy at all. Then he brings this pregnant mother, who's pregnant with an unholy animal, into Beit HaMikdash, v'shachta b'fnim, and he slaughters it inside Beit HaMikdash. Mahu, what's the law? Now, l'man d'amar, according to the opinion, vlada kachin baba yasin hinkdoshin, that the child of a carbon only becomes holy once it comes out. So now, miavi chulin ba'azara, is this person violating the law of bringing chulin, bringing the secular into the azara, and slaughtering the secular in the Beit HaMikdash, or maybe not. Amar Leis, he said to him, it's not a prohibition of chulin ba'azara, the guy had no other choice. Let's go back to the verse. What did the verse say? The verse says that really, originally, we should only be bringing karbanos. Then Hashem said, if you're going to be too far away from Beit HaMikdash, so then you don't have to make your animal into a karban, you can slaughter your animal outside as chulin. So the whole concept of slaughtering chulin is because you're too far away from Beit HaMikdash, so that's why I leave it as chulin and slaughter it outside, don't slaughter it inside. But Emily said here, over here, this animal, can we say about it, you're too far away, you should slaughter it outside Bet HaMikdash? No, you're supposed to bring this animal to Bet HaMikdash, because you have to bring the mother into Bet HaMikdash. And you have to slaughter mother in Bet HaMikdash. So therefore, the mother, which was supposed to be slaughtered in Bet HaMikdash, it has a child inside of it. That child is not considered bringing Chulin into Bet HaMikdash, because that child shouldn't have been left outside, because the mother can't be left outside. So there's no law over here of Chulin Ba'azara. So, boy, me now by Mer of Yosef, now by Esther of Yosef. The other question, he Chulin, let's say the mother was left unholy, Uvlad Shlamin, but the child of the mother was made a Shlamin, and Veshachta Bachutz, he slaughtered it outside Bet HaMikdash. So now, the slaughter on the mother is the right thing. But on the child gets a slaughter through the law of Ben Pekua, but the child is holy. So is this called Shchutei Chutz? Is this called slaughtering a carbon in the wrong place? Because the child was a carbon, it's slaughtered in the wrong place. So Ma, what's the law? Mi Machayev Olei Mishum Shchutei Chutz? Would now the person get lashes for slaughtering a carbon outside Bet HaMikdash? Olo or not? So again he said to him, this is not a sin. Me, Karina and Bay, can we say about this situation? Ve'avium la'Hashem, you're supposed to bring it to God, don't leave it outside. You're not supposed to bring it to God, because the mother is chulin, the mother can't be brought in. So since the mother can't be brought in, because you're not allowed to bring secular things into the Holy Temple, it's not a sin in slaughtering it, even though the slaughter creates a status of slaughter for a child inside, and the child inside is holy as a sacrifice. Lashon Acha, another version, Amar Leh, he said to him, that which could have gone to the temple, then there is a sin in slaughtering it outside the temple. But this can't go into the temple, because what is holy here? Just the fetus. The mother is not holy, and the fetus is inside the mother. To bring the fetus anywhere, you have to bring the mother. You're not allowed to bring the mother into the temple, because the mother is secular. So there is no sin in the slaughter of this animal outside of Beis HaMikdash.
Then
anyway, it's not good for that's as we learned yesterday. C-section anyway can't work on mizbeach. You can't offer an animal that was a C-section onto the mizbeach.
So this is a matter of no choice.
Matter of no choice. All right. So the next Mishnah is going to take us through a journey outside of the realm for first half, outside the realm of Tmura. We're going to go through 8 different laws, all sorts of different topics, and we'll see that they're all similar in that sort of not what you would have thought. That's sort of the concept. So we'll start with the laws of Teruma. The law is that when you have grain and you make a pile of your grain, you've harvested, you have a mitzvah to separate some of it. Let's say for most people, the mitzvah is to take 2%. And to declare that this 2% that I separated of the grain is teruma, it's lifted up grain. It has a special holiness now. It has to be given to Kohanim. Kohanim have to eat it in a state of purity. Now, if you have teruma, not tamura, teruma. Teruma is this grain which is special, given to the Kohanim, that falls into a mixture. Under normal circumstances, when you have prohibited with permitted in a mixture, we look at the majority. But in Teruma, there's a special law that you need 100 times. It's not enough to have a majority. You need 100 times more chulin than Teruma in order to permit it. And that's called dimua, the mixture. The mixture that's prohibited is any ratio of, let's say, 98 times to it, or 95 times to it, or 60 times to it, or 70 times to it, 20 times to it. That's all prohibited. Only if it's 100 times to it would it be permitted. So let's say the question is like this. Let's say you have some Teruma that falls into a mixture. All right. Now you have many more chulin than you have truma, but you don't have 100 times more. You have, let's say, 20 times more chulin than truma. So now this whole mixture is prohibited. Now what happens if some of this mixture now falls into another cup? Do we say that this entire mixture that was prohibited has the status of truma? So the amount that fell out of this mixture now, you need 100 times more than that amount in this second cup? Or do we say, no, we do it by ratio? Even though in the first mixture it wasn't batel, but still, it was only 1 to 20 in the first mixture. So now if you have five kernels that fall into the second mixture, we don't say 5 kernels of truma fell into the second mixture. We say 1 kernel of truma fell into the second mixture. And if I have in the second mixture another 95 kernels, now I had 5 kernels fall in, I'd say 4 plus 96 kernels. So 4 kernels plus 96 kernels together can now annul the truma. So that's the question.
Didn't we already learn that you can't add
correct. That's true.
Make it 101.
That's good. That's right. Aim avatan is lachakilu. You can deliberately do it. This is if it all happens. If it happens, that's right.
Where did the number 100 come from?
This is a rabbinic law. It's a rabbinic law.
Based on what?
Stringencies of truma. Let's treat it with greater respect.
That shows you the extent of the bad, of the sin, if you ate truma.
All right. So that's the first law of the Mishnah. Eina meduma. When you have a mixture which is prohibited because you didn't have 100 times more than the truma, it's not midzameah. When it falls into yet a second mixture, it's not going to create a status of mixture with prohibition. El lefi cheshbon, only based on the ratio of what it was when it first fell in. Second case, ena mechumatz. Let's say you have sourdough. So you have truma, and you allowed this truma to become a flour, then becomes a dough, then you allow it to become sourdough. So sourdough ferments other dough. So if you drop sourdough of truma into a mixture, so now it made the whole mixture fermented. Okay, now the whole mixture is prohibited, even though you have a majority, since the whole mixture is impacted by the truma, because it was all made sour, it's all now prohibited. Now this prohibited sourdough, if it now falls into another dough, again, we're not going to say that the second dough is prohibited because it was made sour from a first dough. We're only going to prohibit it based on the ratio. So we're going to say, well, let's see how much truma sourdough fell into the first mixture. Let's say it was 1 out of 45. Now you have another chunk of dough falling into the second mixture. We say only 1/45th. Of this dough that fell into the second mixture is truma. And now we need to make an assessment. Would 1/45th of this dough be what causes the second dough to ferment? If that 1/45th is not enough to make the second dough ferment, then we say that in the second dough we could have bittul, we could have annulment of the truma sour dough that fell into it. Law number 3.
Even though it's going into regular dough.
Yes, and that regular dough now got fermented.
So
1/60th,
it doesn't work here.
Here's not 1/60th. Yeah. Now, law number 3. We know that sometimes drawn waters will make a mikvah disqualified. Right? A mikvah is supposed to be pure rainwater. But there's a rabbinic law that if you don't yet have 40 sa'ah pure rainwater in the pit, if 3 lugin of drawn waters fall in, it disqualifies the mikvah. So ain't ma'im shuvin posel es ha-mikvah, drawn waters won't disqualify a mikvah lefi cheshbon, only according to a calculation, a ratio. Let's see what that means. Law number 4. Ein mechatas osin mechatas. You can't create the status of spring water with the ashes of para aduma, ela ematan efer, unless first you put in the water and then you put the ashes on top of the water, but not if you put in the ashes first, and then you put water on top of the ashes. Law number 5. Ein beis hapras. The law is that if you have a field, and in the field you know there is a grave, and somebody plowed up the field, so now we're worried that maybe through the plowing of the field they destroyed the human remains, and they scattered the bone chips all over the field. So there's a law midrabanan that 100 amma from where that grave was in each direction is now tame. So ein beis sapras, that's called beis sapras. Ein beis sapras, osin beis sapras. When a field is plowed up, even if he plowed up 2 fields together, it's only that field that was plowed that we're worried that the bone pieces may have been moved around in that field. We're not worried that it went into a second field. So making 1 beis sapras is not going to mean that the second field has the status of beis sapras. Law number 6.
Even if they find bones in it?
No. If we didn't find anything. That's the case. We didn't find anything. Law number 6. Ein truma achar truma. You can't separate truma after you separated truma. Finally, law number 7. Ein tzmura osa tzmura. That which became holy through tzmura cannot itself make something else holy as tzmura. So So let's say I have an ola, and I say, I want to swap this ola for this other animal. So now the other animal also is an ola. Now if I say about other animal, I want to swap other animal for another animal. No, the third animal is not an ola. That's it. It stops after one point. And seven, number eight, finally, v'lo avlado setzmura. The child of a karban doesn't create tzmura. Rabbi Yehuda Amrita says, no, avlado setzmura, the child of a karban makes tzmura. Amru lo. And sages said back to Rabbi Yehuda, no, hektisho setzmura. What you made holy makes tzmura. V'ein havlad oset tzmura. But the child of the karban doesn't make tzmura. Okay, so we have eight laws in the Mishnah. The first two laws dealt with the laws of teruma, and talking about mixtures of teruma. And we're saying that even though the teruma may not have been annulled by the mixture, when it was in mixture number one, if it falls into mixture number two, we don't now say that everything that fell in has the status of teruma. We say, no, we're still thinking about the ratios of how much teruma to chulin is there. And in mixture number two, it's still based on that ratio. And that applies both to chimut, to fermenting, as well as to just regular mixtures. Says the Gemara, man tana, who is the tana of this Mishnah who holds this way in regard to teruma and mixtures of teruma? Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, it's the lo k'rei b'Eliezer. It's against the view of Rav Eliezer. It's not within a Mishnah. Sa'ah shel teruma. Let's say you have a cup called a sa'ah, worth of teruma. Shenafla lepachos mimeyachulin. It fell into less than 100 times. It fell into, let's say, 94 sa'ahs of chulin. Vinidmu. So now the whole mixture is prohibited. Then v'nafla mena meduma lemakom acher. Then out of this mixture of 95 sa'ahs, one of them being chuma, 94 of them being chulin, another sa'ah of these 95 falls into another mixture. We say that this other mixture also needs to have 100 times the sa'ah in order to annul it. Because I assume sa'ah shenafla, he shall sa'ah. The first sa'ah that fell into the first mixture has now fallen into the second mixture. So I assume that it's not a ratio of 195th of a sa'ah that fell into the second mixture. I say, whole sa'ah fell into the second mixture. Chacham say, no, ain't a mitzamas. It only can create a problem. The second mixture, el fi cheshbon shaba, only based on the ratio of what fell into the first. And that is the view of our Mishnah. So our Mishnah, by saying this law, is saying Allah is like Chachamim and not like Rabbi Eliezer.
Rabbi, what happens if it drips? There's a drip of less than 1 in 100, but it drips, you know, once an hour?
Yeah, what, same argument.
What does it dissolve?
Oh, because it was 100 times more than it per drip? Yes, it dissolves. It's called kama kama batel. Bit by bit gets annulled.
How rapidly can it be dripping?
Yeah, if it's too rapid, it's not.
Okay.
Rabbi, can you give me number eight?
Case number eight is that if the child of a holy animal is born, can you do tzmura on that child? There's an argument. Rabbi Yehuda says yes. Chacham says you can't.
Okay. It's an argument right here.
Yeah.
It's not the halakha situation.
We pass like the Chacham. We pass him against Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so now we talk about fermenting. Ein amachumatz, if you have a dough that was fermented with sourdough of teruma, that's not mechametz, that's not going to ferment. The next dough it falls into, but it will, it ferments. I mean, it has the status of fermenting the second dough based on the ratio. So Amrab Yochanan, who is this like? Again, Masnisin, this Mishnah, is the lo k'rei b'Eliezer, not like k'rei b'Eliezer, because k'rei b'Eliezer holds the rule zeh v'zeh goreim aser, that when you have two causes, a prohibited cause and a permitted cause, then it is prohibited. That's against the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is saying that once something was fermented, we say there's still a mixture of teruma and chulin here in that which was fermented, and we have to look at the ratios. According to Blaise, you don't have to look at the ratios, because if there's any bit of a cause that's prohibited, the whole thing becomes prohibited. Titzan, as we went in a Mishnah, Sa'or shel chulin. Let's say you have sourdough of chulin. That's one little piece of dough that was sour. Chulin. This shel truma. Then you have another piece of sourdough, which is truma. Shenaflu tocha isa. They both fall into a big dough. One is not sour enough to ferment the big dough. The other one also on its own is not sour enough to ferment the big dough. However, it's different when they combine the chimtzu, they did to ferment the big dough. So Omer Blezer says, we look at what was last in. If what was last in was the truma, it creates a prohibition. Chacham say no. Bein shenafu lisa l'chatchila, whether the truma fell in first, bein shenafu lisa basofer, the truma fell in last. L'olam ein aser, it's not going to create a prohibition that she'ei boker de'lachmitz, unless the truma itself is enough in order to ferment it. And that's the view of the Mishnah. Truma that ferments the entire mixture prohibits the whole mixture, even though the mixture may have had a majority of 100 more than the truma. But it has to be the truma that's fermenting the whole mixture. But if it's the truma with something else fermenting the mixture, and the truma on its own would not have the ability to ferment the whole mixture, then it would be annulled by a majority of 100, and it could be bata.
So Rabbi, is this sort of related to the stripping? Like if it is sourdough that dripped into the dough, and so little piece, less than 100, but then at some point it starts changing.
To ferment everything? Maybe. I think again, in the case of dripping drip by drip, it gets annulled. Each piece as it came in got annulled.
Even if it changes the substance.
Now,
he
turned the grain of truma into flour.
It could be converted.
Yeah, he made it into flour, made it into a dough, then he allowed it to ferment, to become sourdough.
And gave it to the Kohen.
The Kohen, yeah.
The Kohen could eat it or not?
Yeah, Kohen could eat sourdough, make pretzels if they like.
But even if the mixture is wrong mixture, they said they could do it?
Kohanim can eat it, yes. Yeah. We're talking about non-Kohanim here when we say it's a
rabbi.
Yeah, because there's chulin in there, truma in there. All right, then the Mishnah had law number 3. Ein amayim shuvim posnas hamikvah. Drawn waters only disqualify a mikvah based on a ratio. Matan is the tan of this view. Am Reb Chiya bar Abba, Reb Chiya bar Abba, Sinem Reb Yochanan, it's Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. It's the view of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. It's not really the mission. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says, mikvah sheyesh bo esrim v'yachad sa, make a shamim. Let's say you have a hole in the ground and 21 sa'ah of pure rainwater has collected there. Then you want to fill it up to get to 40 sa'ah. According to Blesman Yaakov, you can take drawn water now. If you could fill the water with, buckets, put the bucket on your shoulder. Teisha Esrei sa'ah, 19 sa'ah. But don't pour the buckets right into the mikvah. Upotkan la mikvah. You can pour them on the ground, and then when they'll roll on the ground, they can roll from the ground into the mikvah. So when you have two things. You have revia, a majority of rainwater, plus hamshacha, plus that the drawn water, which is only a minority, went through the ground and then after the ground into the mikvah. Didn't go directly into the mikvah. According to Elazar ben Yaakov, that is kosher. V'hein tahorin. So that is now all tahor, says Elazar ben Yaakov. Shashi'iva mitzaheres, because drawn waters become purified. Birivia, when there's a majority of pure water, and hamshacha. These drawn waters themselves didn't go directly into the mikvah, rather they were drawn on the ground and then into the mikvah. That's the view of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. So, says the Gemara, maybe that's the idea of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says drawn waters only disqualify based on a calculation. In other words, you have to make a calculation to make sure that the drawn waters are only a minority, plus they are coming through hamshacha in order to permit the mikvah. Says the Gemara, no. Michlal, if you're going to say there are missions of Elazar ben Yaakov, does that mean the Rabbanan Savi, the Rabbanan hold? That even though you had a majority of drawn water, you had a majority of rainwater, and that the drawn water came through hamshacha, it was dragged along the ground, it's still not a kosher mikvah. How could that be? Everybody agrees that that's a kosher mikvah. How do we know that? Ella the Chiyas Ravan Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Ravan said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Shuva Shim Shichu Akula. If you have a full 40 sa'ah of drawn waters, but you draw all those waters on the ground, you have them roll in the ground, and then go into a mikvah, tzahora, it's tar. Money, who's that going to be? Lo Rabbanan v'lo Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. It's not going to be the Rabbanan, because they hold you can't even have a minority in this way. And it's not Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov who says you can only have a minority, but no one's going to say you can have all of it in this way. Ella Marabba, so again, what's our Mishnah? What is our Mishnah referring to when it says drawn waters only disqualify a mikvah based on a calculation? Ella Marabba, Rabba explained, Lefi Cheshbon, Kalim, Rabbi Yossi ben Choni, There is a law that when you are filling up a mikveh, you have to get to 40 sa'ah. If you haven't yet gotten to 40 sa'ah of pure water, you have, let's say, 20 sa'ah, 30 sa'ah, 35 sa'ah. Then if drawn waters fall directly into this 35 sa'ah, they can disqualify it forever. If three lugin of drawn waters fall in, it can disqualify it forever. That's when we fill up a mikveh, we put up a big, you know, tape, and we say nobody's allowed in, and we write things on the tape to make it impossible for people to go in, because we're worried if someone's going to go in, they'll take a cup full and then pour it back in, they'll ruin the whole mikveh forever. So, Alam Rabbah, Rabbah said, what do we talk about a calculation? Lefi cheshbon kelim, it means the calculation of utensils according to Yossi ben Choni. We have a machloka. Shlosh lugan mayim shnu'uvin shenafu l'mayim. If you have mikvah waters that are less than 40 sa'ah, and three lugan of drawn waters fall into it, bishnayim u'shlosha kelim, if they fall in through two or three utensils, afil arba v'chamisha kelim, even four or five utensils, in other words, each cupful was less than a log, kosnas ha-mikvah, they disqualify the mikvah. That's not our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi ben Choni Omer, Yossi ben Choni says, Bishnaim u'shlosha kelim, poslas ha-mikvah. If the three lugin were divided into two or three utensils, in other words, each that fell in was at least a log or more, then poslas ha-mikvah, it ruins the mikvah. Barba v'chamisha, but if the three lugin are divided into four or five utensils, Ein poslas ha-mikvah, that doesn't disqualify the mikvah, so that's what the Mishnah means. Ein mayim she'uven poslas ha-lofi cheshbon, drawn water is only disqualified based on a calculation, or you have to calculate how many utensils were holding these drawn waters. If each utensil was holding at least a log, then that drawn water can disqualify the mikvah. But each utensil is holding less than a log, that drawn water will not disqualify the utensil.
The mikvah. Disqualification is temporarily, no?
Or it's for good. You have to dry it. You have to take all the water out, dry it, and restart.
Restart the whole thing. You don't have to tear up the mikveh and build it.
No, you don't have to rebuild. You just have to dry it. Make the bone dry and restart.
40 sa'ah, Rabbi?
40 sa'ah is about 150 gallons.
150 gallons.
Okay, now we move on to law number four, which is the law of the ashes of Parah Adumah. The ashes of Parah Adumah, when you have a red cow, right, the red cow can create purity, but it removes the tumas meis. You have to mix the ashes of the red cow together with spring water. So the Mishnah said, Ein mechatas nasa mechatas. The spring water and ashes only have the status of mechatas, the waters of atonement, if the water went in first, and then you put in the ashes. But if you put in the ashes first and then the water, it doesn't work. Mantana. Okay, who's the Tana of this Mishnah? That ashes first and then water doesn't work. I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, the Lord Rabbi Shimon. It's not Rabbi Shimon. The Tana of the Braisa in regards to the waters of the Sota. Hikdim afar lemayim. If you put the dirt from the floor of the temple into the utensil, then you put in the water of the Kiyar for the Mesota puzzle. That's disqualified waters to give to the Sota woman. However, Rabbi Shimon, Machshir, Rabbi Shimon says, if you put the dirt of Sota in and then the waters, it's kosher. So if he holds that about Sota, he will also hold that in regards to Parah Adumah. But if you put the ashes in and then the water, he would hold it's kosher. How do we know this? All my time to Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon? Because it says about the ashes of Parah Adumah, v'lakula tameh, they are to take for the impure, may afar from the dirt of Srefa Sachatas, of the burnt Parah Adumah. And the Torah says, v'nasan alav mayim chayim, and put on top of this dirt spring waters, living waters. V'tanim l'dinu v'raisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, v'chi afar hu, now the word is may afar. Afar with an ayin means dirt. But Parah Adumah is not dirt. Parah Adumah is ash. It should be afer with an aleph. Is it afar v'alo aferhu? It's really afer. So why did the Torah use the word afar? Shina kasvim mashmo. The Torah deliberately chooses the word afar, even though the right word would have been afer. Ladan amanu gzeira shava. In order to link it to sota, because in sota it says afar. Shenemar afar. It says in regards to sota that there has to be afar. There has to be dirt put into the water of the sota. Now, Nehemiah Lahalan, it says about the water of the Sota, V'lakach ha-kohen mayim kedoshim b'kli cheres, u'min he'afar, asher yeh b'kar kamishkan, yikach ha-kohen, v'nasan el ha-mayim, he's to take from the dirt and put it into the water, so Nehemiah Lahalan, just like over there, ideally, afar al-gabe mayim, First you should put in the waters and then you should put the dirt in. Afkan, so to over here through the Gzeira Shava, we know that ideally, Afar al Gabe Mayim, first should be the waters and then should be the ash. But again, through the Gzeira Shava, Ma'akan, just like here in regards to Paraduma, Hiktim Afar Lamayim, if you put the ashes in first and then the waters, it's kosher, because it says, V'nasan alav Mayim Chaim, you'll put on top of the dirt the living water, so the dirt could come in first. Afkan, so to in regards to Sota, Hiktim Afar Lamayim kosher. If he puts in the dirt before he puts in the water, it's kosher. Now, how did Rabbi Shimon know that in regards to Parah Aduma, you could put in the ash and then the water on top of the ash? Because they're trei krai ksivi, because they're two psukim. On the one hand, it says, v'nasan alav, put the water on top of the ash. Almeifer bereisha, that means that the ash is first. Hadar ksiv, then there's another verse that says, mayim chayim el keli. The living waters go into the utensil. That means that the waters go into the utensil, they don't go into the ash. Haketzad, so what's, how do you resolve the contradiction? It's like this. Ratz, if you want, Afar Lamata, first you should put the dirt, and on top of it, the water. But Ratza, but if you don't want to do that, then it should be Afar Lamala, it should be water in first, and then the dirt. Okay, Tana Didan, what about our Tana, who holds that you have to put in water first and dirt on top? You can't do this. We don't say you could put in dirt first and then the water. My time, and what's he going to do with all these sources? Amalach, he'll tell you, listen, Sefer Dekra, when the Pasuk says, Mayim Chayim El Keli, living waters into the utensil, that is Dafka. It has to be that way. The living waters have to come into the utensil. They can't come into the dirt. They can't come into the ash. I had said, V'nasan alav mayim chayim, you'll put on top of the ash living waters. What that means is, la'arvan, that there's a mitzvah to mix them. First you put in the water. Then you put in the ash. But then the water should be on top of the ash, because you should be mixing this whole thing with your finger, so that there's water going on top and the ash below, mixing and mixing. So Gemara says, my chazis, ta'amit sefer dekra dafka. Why do you say that the latter part of the pasuk, living waters to the utensil, that is the absolute way it has to be? Maybe the beginning of the pasuk, which says v'nasan alav dafka, that the water is put on top of it, that is what is most precise. Mara says, you can't think to say that, because ma matzina b'chol makom, just like we find in other places, makshir, that which gives a new status to the water, is lamalas, put on top of the water. Afkan, therefore, in Paraduma as well, machshir, what gives a new status to the water, should be lamalas, should be put on top, and not put below, and the water on top of it. So again, this is the fourth law. The fourth law of the Mishnah is that in regards to preparing Paraduma waters, first you are to put in the water, and then you are to put in the ashes. That happens to be against the view of Rabbi Shimon, who held that's ideal, but you could put in ash and then water. Our Mishnah is against Rabbi Shimon. It says you have to put in water, and only on top of the water, the ash, that gives the water the new status. Rabbi Chananya ben Akash Omer, Ratzaka Deshbarach Lissak.